Chapter 24. Nicholas Bell entered Cassandra Bell's second-floor apartment and entered the living room, which was in fact where Cassandra Bell lived, the bedroom of the apartment being used as storage and as a lounge for her caregivers. Cassandra's morning caregivers had left for the day. Her afternoon caregivers would not come to the apartment for another hour. Nicholas walked over to the living room's major feature, a cradle, in which lay a young woman. It looked, as all Haydens did, as if she were sleeping.
"It's good of you to come see me, brother," Cassandra said. "I haven't seen you at all this last week."
Her voice was carried by a speaker next to her cradle, into which was also embedded a small camera, which she could use to see within the apartment. Cassandra preferred a simple, real-world presentation, which may have been why Nicholas paused when he saw the unfamiliar shape in the room, a threep.
"A gift from an admirer," Cassandra said, following Nicholas's gaze. "Not someone who admires me enough to know that I don't use, nor have I ever used, a personal transport. But one of my caregivers knows someone who needs one. It's waiting for her to come take it."
Nicholas nodded and smiled and took his small backpack from his shoulder. He unzipped it and reached inside.
"Why, brother," Cassandra Bell said, "did you bring me a gift?"
"Yes," Nicholas said. He took the large kitchen knife he had drawn from the backpack and thrust it into the young woman in the cradle, driving it deep into her abdomen. Two more hard, deep thrusts into the belly, pushing upward. A rough jab downward, piercing the left upper thigh. A thrust in search of the femoral artery. The flesh sliced open, pale. Three thrusts making a sloppy triangle of cuts just below the sternum. One vicious slash on the left side of the neck, and a matching slash on the right, opening up the arteries, taking blood to the brain, and the veins drawing it away. Nicholas Bell dropped the knife to the floor and stepped back, breathing heavily. He stared at the ruined body as if something about it puzzled him, such as the body he had stabbed 8 times now had not one drop of blood coming out of it.
"Brother," Cassandra Bell whispered, "it didn't work."
I launched myself from the chair I was sitting in and tackled Nicholas Bell, who went down rolling and squirming. He managed to get out of my grip and scrambled to his backpack. I rolled up and saw him, gun in hand, aiming at me. "Oh, come on," I said. "I just got this threep." The crash behind us, the sound of FBI agents breaking down the door to get at Nicholas, distracted Nicholas just enough for me to run at him, but not enough for me to break his aim. He fired, and the bullet took me in the shoulder, spinning me. Nicholas turned and fired 3 shots into the sliding glass door separating the living room and the balcony, and then ran into the shattered glass, hands up to protect his face. The glass tore away in a sheet, and then Nicholas was through and stumbling over the balcony. "Fuck," I said, and followed him. That's when I learned the shot Bell took at me had affected the movement of my right arm. I tumbled over the balcony railing and fell hard onto the concrete walkway underneath. If I had been in a human body, I'm pretty sure I would have been dead or paralyzed. But I wasn't. I stood up, scanned around, and saw Bell 30 yards ahead, limping but moving surprisingly fast. His gun was still in his right hand. "What the hell just happened?" Van said in my head. "He jumped out of the balcony," I said. "He's running on 9th Street, headed toward Welburn Square. I'm going after him." "Don't lose him again," Van said. "Again?" I said, and then went running. Bell's limp had gotten worse when I caught up to him, just short of Welburn Square. I jumped him, and we both went down on the red brick sidewalk. I grabbed at him with my one good arm. He kicked it off and pistol-whipped me with the butt of his gun. This did not work as well as he wanted it to. I had turned down my pain sensitivity. He turned the gun on me, and I rolled away. Bell took off again, limping, cutting across the central circle of the grass in the square, scattering passers-by when they saw his gun. I went after him again, tripping him short of Taylor Street. He turned as he stumbled and fired at me, hitting me in the hip. My left leg collapsed under me. I looked up to see Bell give a small grin of triumph and then run out into Taylor Street, on which he was immediately struck by a car. Bell splayed dramatically across the hood of the automobile and then collapsed on the road, clutching his leg.
Van got out of the driver's side, walked over to Bell, ascertained that he was not in immediate danger of death, and handcuffed him. 2 minutes later, all the other FBI agents had caught up to us. Van walked over to me, still down on the sidewalk. She sat down next to me and pulled her e-cigarette from her jacket pocket. "That's the third threep you've ruined in 2 days," she said. "Fourth," I said. "I don't want to tell you how to do your job," she said, "but I will say that if I were your insurer, I'd drop your ass." "You hit our suspect with a car," I said. "Oops," Van said. She sucked on her cigarette. "You could have killed him." "I was going 5 miles an hour," Van said. "And anyway, it was an accident." "You're not supposed to be able to get into accidents like that anymore," I said. "It's amazing what you can do when you disable auto drive," Van said. "We promised Cassandra Bell we wouldn't hurt her brother," I said. "I know," Van said. "It was a risk. On the other hand, that asshole just shot my partner. Twice. It wasn't Bell who shot me. That's not the asshole I was talking about." She put her cigarette away. "I'm curious about a number of things," Van said to Bell. They were sitting across the table from each other in one of the Bureau's interrogation rooms. Van had a manila folder in front of her. "But I'll tell you what I'm curious about right this second. It's that you're here in an FBI interrogation room, under arrest, and you have neither affirmatively invoked your right to remain silent or asked for your lawyer. You should. You should do both." "Yes," I said. I was standing behind Van. I was in one of the threeps the FBI used for visiting agents. The agent who had been using it half an hour before was currently stewing in Chicago because I had interrupted her work. She could stew for a while longer. "Although if I were you, I wouldn't try to call Sam Schwartz." "Why not?" Bell asked, looking up at me. "We arrested him this morning on charges of murder and conspiracy relating to the Loudoun Pharma bombing," I said. "Won't his boss be surprised?" "Hubbard's in the clear," Van said. "Everything points to Schwartz alone. Not the best sort of extracurriculars to have, though." She turned back to Bell. "Now, would you like to remain silent?" she asked. "When you answer, keep in mind that the minute you were out of your apartment and on your way here, we executed a warrant to search your residence and belongings, which is to say we've already found the video you made confessing to the murder and also your suicide." "Which explains the gun," I said. "Stabbing's fine for your sister, but you wanted your own end to be quick and mostly painless. But I suppose me rushing you scrambled your plans a bit." "So," Van said again, "do you want to remain silent? Do you want a lawyer?" "You have the video," Bell said to Van. He motioned up to me. "Your partner saw the attack. What would be the point?" "To be clear, you're waiving your right to silence and to an attorney," Van said. "I really need you to say yes, if that's in fact what you want." "Yes," Bell said. "It's what I want. I intended to kill my sister, Cassandra Bell. That was my goal." "Well, that makes our lives a lot easier," Van said. "Thank you." "I'm not doing it for you," Bell said. "I wanted people to know my sister is dangerous." "Is this covered in your suicide note?" Van asked. "Because if it is, if it's all the same, we can just skip ahead to us taking you in and putting you in federal detention while you await sentencing." "Well, there is that one thing," I said. Van snapped the fingers of her left hand. "That's right. I did have one more question for you, Nicholas." "What is it?" Bell asked. "How long are you going to keep this up?" Van asked. Bell looked at her uncertainly. "I don't know what you mean by that." "I mean, how long are you going to keep pretending to be Nicholas Bell, Mr. Hubbard?" Van asked. "I ask only because Shane and I have a bet going on here. Shane thinks you're only going to keep this up until we get you into detention. After all, you do have a life and a multinational conglomerate to run, and now that you've confessed as Bell and admitted guilt, the hard part is done." "That's right," I said. "When the real Bell surfaces and backtracks in detention, no one will believe him. They'll think he's begun to regret his decision and is maybe hoping for some sort of psychiatric ruling." "That's a fair call," Van said, "but I said no. You've come too far with this to half-ass it now. I think you're committed to this all the way through the sentencing and housing. It's only once the door slams shut on Bell in a 6x9 cell that you'll know for sure you've gotten away with it. So you have to stick with it,
just like you've stuck with it this entire week. Yes, that means Accelerant doesn't have you at the helm. But maybe, when Bell's asleep, you can sneak out and leave a note saying you're on vacation for a couple of weeks. They can get along without you. Legal might have a problem, I observed. They've got a lot of lawyers, Van said. They can work around. Neither of you are making any sense, Bell said. He's sticking with it, I said. Well, he has to right now, Van said. But let's mix things up. Mr. Bell, I have a picture for you. Van opened the manila folder, pulled a picture out of it, and slid the photo over to Nicholas Bell. Meet Camille Hammond, she said to him. 23 years old and a resident of the Lady Bird Johnson Hayden Care Facility in Occoquan, which is where the NIH stores Haydens with other severe brain disorders who have no family or other means of support. More accurately, Camille was a resident until Wednesday evening when she died of a persistent pneumonial infection, unfortunately common in people in her situation. Bell looked at the picture but said nothing. The NIH wasn't too thrilled with us when we asked if we could borrow her for today's festivities, Van continued, but then they also didn't want to see Cassandra Bell brutally murdered by her own brother on the eve of the largest civil rights march on D.C. in a decade either. So in the end, they decided to help us. She leaned in across the table to Bell. So here's the thing I want to know, she said. You came into that room to murder your sister, someone you knew your entire life. I'm a little confused how you managed not to recognize that the woman you stabbed 8 times was not the same woman that you had known for 20 years. Bell looked up and stayed silent. You know what? Don't answer that, Van said, and looked back at me. Tell them to bring in Tony. I sent the message with my inside voice. A minute later, Tony was in the room with us. Tony Wilton, Lucas Hubbard, I said, by way of introduction. Lucas Hubbard, Tony Wilton. If it was a week ago, I'd say it was an honor to meet you, Tony said to Bell. As it is, I can still say I admire your skill at coding. Tony, Van said, if you would be so kind as to catch up Mr. Hubbard on your latest adventures. So that thing you did where you downloaded code into the processor through the interpolator really was some genius-level work, Tony said. But it's also really dangerous because, well, Tony gestured at Bell, for obvious reasons. So, last night I wrote a patch that would block that pathway, and the NIH, which can still dictate mandatory patching, put it at the top of their priority queue. Right around the time you entered Cassandra Bell's apartment, it started going out to every integrator in the United States. And after their patch, it'll go into the general queue for Haydens, too. I mean, there's no way that you could exploit it with a Hayden like you do with an integrator. But then we didn't see this coming with the integrators until you exploited it. Evil but brilliant. So we decided better safe than sorry. I'm not understanding anything you're telling me, Bell said. What is an interpolator? Tony looked over to me. He's really committed to this, he said. What choice does he have? I said. If he drops out now, the real Nicholas Bell surfaces and spills everything. Which reminds me, Tony said, and turned back to Bell. I'm sure you, of all people, are aware that patches to neural networks can be general, or they can be tailored to be very, very specific, as in a patch for one single neural network. Bell looked back at him blankly. Okay, since you're pretending not to understand any of this, I'll make it really simple, Tony said. In addition to coding a very general patch last night, I also coded a very specific patch for the neural network here. Tony tapped the top of Bell's head lightly. It does 2 things. One of them deals with control of the data stream. Pay attention, Van said to Bell. This is good. Usually, during integration, either the integrator or the client is able to stop the data flow, if the client is done with the session or the integrator's had enough of the client, Tony said. Right now, you've managed to disable Bell's ability to kick you out of his head. That doesn't seem fair, Van said. Right, Tony said. So the patch I just had automatically downloaded into Bell's network removes your ability to cut the data stream. You've got Bell trapped in his own head. And now I've got you trapped in the same place. Go ahead, try to cut it.
Oh, he's not going to do that, Van said. You're bluffing to try to get him to leave Bell's head. Huh, Tony said. I hadn't thought about that. Fair call. He'll find out soon enough, I said. He had Nicholas Bell trying to kill his sister. I tapped my head. I have it right here. When the door of that 6x9 cell slams shut, he'll be in there with Bell. So, that's the first thing about the patch, Tony said. The second thing is something I think you're going to really like. Hold that thought, Van said. Tony silenced himself. Van turned to Bell. Anything to say yet, Mr. Hubbard?
I honestly don't know what you are going on about, Bell said pleadingly. I'm very confused.
Let's aim for some clarity, Van said, and nodded to me. Our next guests, please. Another minute, and May and Janice Sonny came into the room. Van got up to give May her seat. Janice stood behind her grandmother, hand lightly on her shoulder.
This is him? May asked, looking at Van.
It is, Van said. On the inside, at least.
I don't know these two ladies, Bell said.
And that's the first true thing you've said all afternoon, Van said. Lucas Hubbard?
May and Janice Sonny, I said. Their last name may sound familiar because you used Johnny Sonny, their grandson and brother.
This is insane, Bell said. I think we've done enough of the preliminaries, Van said. And I'm getting tired of the bullshit, so let's get right to it. She put her foot on Bell's chair and spun it back and out from the table. We lied to you about Schwartz, she said to Bell. We've got him on murder and conspiracy, but he's cut a deal with us. He's told us the whole story of your play to dominate the Hayden market. His version of the story doesn't look good for you at all. We're ready to hit accelerant with a battalion of forensics geeks. I've got 20 more at your house waiting for me to tell them to go in. We have almost more warrants on you and your companies than we have people to serve them. Almost. Van kicked Bell's chair lightly. It jumped a fraction of an inch and Bell with it.
But you are still here playing your idiotic game of I'm not Hubbard.
It's time to stop playing that game, Van said. So, here's what we're doing now. You stop pretending to be Bell. She pointed to May and Janice Sonny. You can start by telling the two of them what really happened to Johnny Sonny. They deserve to know. Or, you can keep pretending to be Bell. In which case, here's Tony to tell you what happens next. She looked over to Tony. Tell him about the other thing your patch does, she said.
It flips the script, Tony said.
A little more technical, please, Van said, looking at Bell. I think he can keep up. When a client uses an integrator, the integrator steps back and lets the client's consciousness drive the body, Tony said. The integrator assists but is supposed to hold back. He gestured at Bell. With your variation of it, the integrator's consciousness is pushed back entirely. It's disconnected from any control of the body at all. The patch I've introduced into Bell's body reverses that. It gives the integrator complete physical control while relegating the client to the background, unable to do anything but watch. The client experiences lock-in, I said.
That's right, Tony said.
Now, obviously, it makes no sense to do this in the usual client-integrator relationship. But then, he looked down at Bell, this isn't the usual relationship, is it? Bell gets his life back, and Hubbard is trapped inside forever, I said.
And that's not even the good part, Van said.
She got in very close to Bell.
Here's the really good part.
Bell is a known integrator for Hubbard now. So why not just let that roll?
Have him say he's Hubbard? I asked.
Have him be Hubbard, Van said. She looked up at me and Tony. We back off on the warrants, let Schwartz take the fall, and install Bell at the head of Accelerant. And then he starts dismantling the company, sells it off piece by piece. And with the profits from the sales, he invests in Hayden's, starting with your dad's new thing, Chris.
Oh, right, I said. I leaned in on the table toward Bell. My father just reached a deal with the Navajo Nation to fund a non-profit competitor to the Agora, I said. The Navajo have an immense server farm, more than enough room for the entire Hayden Nation, staffed by Navajo techs, affordable and accessible, and technically not in U.S. territory. We're announcing it tomorrow at the march, to make the point that the Hayden community has another option besides being strip-mined by someone trying to corner the market.
Just think, Van said.
Cassandra Bell announcing it, Marcus Shane standing on one side, Lucas Hubbard on the other, coming together for every Hayden, and then Hubbard dismantling his company one piece at a time to keep funding the goal until there's nothing left. It's a dream, I said, standing back from the table. Yes, Van said. A more than slightly unethical dream.
More unethical than bombing competitors, attacking federal agents, and planning to assassinate a Hayden activist? Van asked.
Well, no, I admitted. Then I'm fine with it, Van said. And the only people who will ever know are in this room right now.
Anyone have a problem with it?
No one said anything.
Then these are the options you have, Hubbard, Van said, returning to Bell. Admit who you are, and tell May and Janice what happened to Johnny Sonny. You're guilty, but your company will survive. Keep doing what you're doing, and we flip the script. Bell gets his life back from you, and then takes over your life. And you watch everything you've ever done fall apart. Make your choice.
Bell sat there, silent, for more than a minute. Then,
at first it was more a thought experiment than anything else, Hubbard said. And it was definitely Hubbard. Even cuffed to a chair, the swagger was there. I had written the code and modeled the network, designed for a client to integrate full-time. There was no point to it other than curiosity. But then Abrams Kettering came along and the business model I'd been working on was changing. Other businesses started to panic, but I knew there were opportunities there. They just needed to be directed in a way that was effective but untraceable and not reproducible. If I used the network I designed, I knew I could manipulate people and events in ways that other businesses couldn't, and in a way that couldn't be traced back to me. It was Sam who pointed out that Medicord had access to Navajo Nation medical records, and that those records weren't part of the U.S. National Health Database. We could find a test subject there who would be otherwise invisible. No records elsewhere, nothing to track. We found two, Johnny and Bruce. We moved on Johnny first. He was...
Hubbard stopped, realizing how what he was about to say would sound to Johnny Sonny's family.
Say it, Van said.
He was mentally deficient, Hubbard said. Easy to fool, easy to control. We set him up in California through a Chinese company, Acceler, and had a minority stake in. Our contacts with him were through one-of-a-kind threeps. Everything untraceable, even though Johnny wasn't smart enough to figure it out. Overcautious, we kept everything small as possible. Only Sam and I knew everything. When the network was installed, we tested it first for a few minutes at a time, then an hour or two. We became comfortable using Johnny for more things. Driving him on simple tasks, a little corporate spying, some bits of sabotage, nothing really significant, simply testing the capabilities. We figured out that Johnny was limited, not in his brain, that didn't matter when I was driving him, but the same lack of identity that attracted us to him limited him. Having no identity makes it harder to move in our society, not easier. With what we learned from Johnny, we started working on commercial network models. We owned Luckturn, and we had the database of networks to work with. I came up with the interpolator method to hack into the networks and leave a door open. All we had to do was wait for the right opportunity. And then Abrams Kettering passed and the walkout in March were planned. It was the right opportunity to destabilize the market and pick off companies we wanted. I knew Nicholas Bell was an integrator. I'd known people who used him. And I knew that when Abrams Kettering passed, he would be looking for a long-term contract. But I didn't want to approach him directly. I had one last job for Johnny Sonny. I drove him out to D.C. and used him to contact Bell, posing as a tourist. I used him to get into Bell's mind. When I was in Bell, Sam was supposed to link right in and take over Johnny. But Sam got distracted for a couple of minutes. Johnny came to, looked around, grabbed the love seat, and ran at the window with it, and pushed it out into the street. Then he came back, grabbed the glass, and smashed it against the dresser. I thought he was going to use it on me. I put up my hands. He yelled at me, telling me that now someone would come up to see what was happening. He wanted to stop being used. He wanted to know what he was being used for. He said he wanted to go home. Hubbard paused again. Keep going, Van said. If you won't say it, Bell will. It's all coming out, Hubbard. I laughed at him, Hubbard said. I knew Sam was coming to link to him, and then that would be the end of it. So I told him that what he was being used for was to make me very rich. He wanted to know if he'd ever been made to hurt people. I told him that he didn't remember it anyway, so he shouldn't worry about it. Then he said to me, I know you're a bad man, and I know you won't let me go home, so now I'm going to make trouble for you. And then he cut his throat. May and Janice stared at Hubbard stonily. I remembered Claw Redhouse telling me how they tried not to show too much grief. I'm sorry, Hubbard said, looking at May and Janice. Don't you dare, Janice spat. You're not sorry Johnny is dead. You were going to kill someone today. You're sorry you got caught, but you did get caught. You got caught because Johnny stopped you from getting away with what you were doing. He made trouble for you, just like he said. My brother was slow, but he could figure things out if he took enough time. He figured you out. And now look at you. My brother is 10 of you.
Janice helped May up out of the chair. The two of them left the room without looking back. You saw him cut his throat, but then you panicked, didn't you? Van said after they left. You actually left Bell's body for at least a couple of minutes.
Yes, Hubbard said. I left. But Sam told me to go back in. He said if Bell told anyone about his experience, that they would figure out what we had done, and sooner or later it would come back to us. I had to stay with Bell until the thing was done. He snorted. He said he'd come up with a cover story that would last through Saturday, and that would be long enough, for all the good it did either of us.
You were gone just long enough for Bell to give us a clue, Van said. He was confused just enough by what was happening to let us know something was seriously wrong. Thanks for that.
Hubbard smirked ruefully and looked up at Van.
Now what? He said.
Now it's time for you to go get arrested for real, Mr. Hubbard, Van said. Go back to your body. Do it now.
You need to swap out the patch, Hubbard said.
About that, Tony said.
What about it? Hubbard asked.
We lied to you, Van said. There was no patch.
There was a general patch that closed the interpolator back door, Tony said. That was true. So if you backed out, you wouldn't have been able to come back in.
But we knew you wouldn't do that, Van said. So we decided to press our luck.
There was no script flipper either, Hubbard said.
If we had that, we would have led with that, I said. And then we would have made you watch your company burn.
Now go, Hubbard, Van said. My colleagues are waiting for you. You've got a lot to answer for.
Hubbard left, which was not noticeable. Nicholas Bell surfacing was. He shook himself, almost knocking over his chair and sucked in his breath.
Jesus, he said.
Nicholas Bell, Van said.
Yes, Bell said. Yes, it's me.
Nice to meet you, Van said.
Hold still, I said, gently putting a hand on his shoulder. I need to get you out of these cuffs, I undid him.
He shook out his arms and rubbed his wrists.
Mr. Bell, Van said.
Yes, he said.
What Hubbard said about Johnny Sonny, Van asked. Bell nodded.
It was true, he said. I'm sorry you had to watch that, Van said.
Bell laughed shakily.
It's been a long week, he said.
Yes, Van said, that it has.
I hate to say this, I said to Bell, but we need to have you answer some questions. We need you to tell us everything you saw or heard while Hubbard had control of your body. Trust me. I intend to tell you everything I know about that son of a bitch, Bell said. But there's something I would really like to do before I do that. If I can, if you don't mind.
Of course, Van said. Tell us what you would like to do.
I'd really like to see my sister now, Bell said.